What is the abomination of desolation? Answer. Jesus spoke of a coming abomination of desolation in the Olivet Discourse, as he referenced a future event mentioned in Daniel 9:27. In Matthew 24:15, 16, Jesus says, "So when you see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by the prophet Daniel, standing in the holy place, then those in Judea must flee to the mountains." An abomination is something that causes disgust or hatred, and desolation is a state of complete emptiness or destruction. Jesus warned that something or someone that people detested would stand in the temples someday. When that horror occurred, residents of Judea should seek cover without delay. Other translations speak of the abomination that causes desolation, NIV, the sacrilegious object that causes desecration, NLT, and that horrible thing, CEV. The Amplified Bible adds the note that the abomination of desolation is the appalling sacrilege that astonishes and makes desolate. Jesus referenced Daniel in his words in the Olivet Discourse. The prophet Daniel mentioned the abomination of desolation in three places. He will make a firm covenant with many for 1 week, but in the middle of the week he will put a stop to sacrifice and offering. And the abomination of desolation will be on a wing of the temple until the decreed destruction is poured out on the desolator. Daniel 9:27, CSB. Forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices, and place there the abomination of desolation. Daniel 11:31, NKJV. From the time that the regular sacrifice is abolished, and the abomination of desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. Daniel 12:11, NASB. The wording in the above translations indicates that the abomination of desolation is an object. In some other translations, the abomination appears to be a person. On the wing of abominations shall come one who makes desolate. Daniel 9:27, ESV. Regardless of whether the abomination of desolation is a person or a thing, Daniel predicted the following. 1. A future ruler will make a treaty with the people of Israel. 2. The terms of this treaty will be for a week, which we take to be a period of 7 years. 3. Midway through this time, the ruler will gather his troops and put an end to the sacrifices and offerings in the temple. 4. At that time the ruler will desecrate the temple, setting up some type of sacrilegious object. 5. The desecration of the temple will continue until the judgment of God is finally meted out on the ruler and his followers, 1,290 days, 3½ years and 1 month later. Daniel's prophecies about the abomination of desolation seem to have at least a partial fulfillment in 167 BC, when a Greek ruler by the name of Antiochus IV desecrated the temple in Jerusalem. Antiochus called himself Epiphanes Illustrious I or God Manifest. He set up an altar to Zeus over the altar of burnt offering, and he sacrificed a pig on the altar. Antiochus went even further in his atrocities, slaughtering a great number of the Jews and selling others into slavery. And he issued decrees forbidding circumcision, and requiring Jews to sacrifice to pagan gods and eat pig meat. What Antiochus did certainly qualifies as an abomination, but it was not a complete fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy. Antiochus Epiphanes did not enter a covenant with Israel for 7 years, for example. And in Matthew 24, Jesus, speaking some 200 years after Antiochus's evil actions, spoke of Daniel's prophecy as having a still future fulfillment. The question then becomes, when, after Jesus' day, was the abomination of desolation prophecy fulfilled? Or are we still waiting for a fulfillment? The objected view is that Jesus' warning in Matthew 24:15 concern events leading up to the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. In this view, the abomination of desolation probably occurred during the Roman occupation of Jerusalem, when the Roman army brought their heathen images and standards into the temple courts. We take the futurist view, which sees the abomination of desolation prophecy as still future. In our view, Jesus was referring to the Antichrist who, in the end times, will establish a covenant with Israel for 7 years, and then break it by doing something similar to what Antiochus Epiphanes did in the temple. The sacrilegious object Jesus called the abomination of desolation could be the image of the beast that the Antichrist's right-hand man, the false prophet, will order to be set up and worshipped. Revelation 13:14. Of course, for Matthew 24:15 to be yet future, the temple in Jerusalem will have to be rebuilt before the tribulation begins. Those who are alive during the tribulation should be watchful and recognize that the breaking of the covenant with Israel and the abomination of desolation will herald the beginning of the worst 3.5 years in history. See Matthew 24:21. Be always on the watch, and pray that you may be able to escape all that is about to happen, and that you may be able to stand before the Son of Man. Luke 21:36. If a group of Christians sat down to list perplexing passages, it wouldn't take long for someone to mention Matthew 24:15-16. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand that, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. The reasons for uncertainty are easy to list. What is an abomination? What abomination does Jesus have in mind? One that belongs to his generation, or one from the last days? What is the connection between the prophecies of Daniel and Jesus? Who is the reader, and what should he or she understand? In what sense should readers flee to the mountains? Should they obey literally or metaphorically? As always, the first step is to read the text in literary, cultural, historical, and in the context of canon law. Then we analyze the structure of the passage and do the necessary lexical and grammatical work. We begin with the key phrase, abomination of desolation. The term abomination appears more than 100 times in the Old Testament and just a few times in the New Testament. An abomination is normally a great sin, commonly worthy of death. Readers immersed in current debates about sexual ethics may first think an abomination is a sexual sin. Indeed, Scripture calls sexual sins like adultery, homosexuality, and bestiality abominations, e.g., Leviticus 18:22, 29-30. But more often throughout the Bible, abomination refers to major covenant violations, especially idolatry. In the historical books, abomination always describes idolatry, often with child sacrifice. 1 Kings 11:7, 2 Kings 23:13. Abomination also refers to idolatry in the prophets, including Daniel 9 and 11. Daniel uses sikkus, a term that always appears in connection with idolatry. The interpretation of Daniel 9 to 11 is difficult and disputed, but it does have some fixed points, and the nature of the abomination that causes desolation is one of them. Daniel 9:26 to 27 refers to a prince who will destroy the city Jerusalem along with its temple and sacrifices, and on the wings of abominations shall come one who makes desolate. Two chapters later there is another reference to an abomination in connection to the temple. Forces from him shall appear and profane the temple and fortress, and shall take away the regular burnt offering. And they shall set up the abomination that makes desolate. 11:31. Scholars generally agree that the first reference of these prophecies is the Seleucid king Antiochus Epiphanes IV, who ruled Palestine from 175-64 BC. Antiochus treated Israel with such violence and contempt that they rebelled against him. When he came to suppress the rebellion, his forces entered the temple, stopped the regular sacrifices, set up an idol of or altar for Zeus, and apparently offered swine there as a sacrifice. This is an abomination because it is idolatry, and it brings desolation, because it defiles the holy place at the heart of Israel. This act was the abomination of desolation, the abomination causing desolation. Larger structure. Having surveyed the original meaning of abomination of desolation in Daniel, we now to turn Matthew 24:15 16, first looking at the larger structure of Matthew 24. These verses come in the context of the Olivet Discourse, which begins with Jesus telling his disciples that the temple will be destroyed. 24:1-2. The disciples then asked Jesus to explain, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the close of the age? 24:3. The disciples probably thought they were asking one question. The fall of Jerusalem, Jesus' return, and the end of the age were one complex event in their minds. It may seem to us that they asked three questions. When will the temple fall? What is the sign of Jesus' return? What is the sign of the close of this age? But a close reading shows that Jesus heard and answered two questions. Evangelical scholars will disagree about how much of this passage is devoted to each question, but they generally agree that 24:3-35 mostly refers to events leading up to the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70. The segment ends with Jesus promising this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. 24:35. A generation normally lasts 40 years in Scripture, and Jerusalem and its temple did fall within 40 years, as Jesus said. So his core prediction was fulfilled by AD 70. Space forbids that I address double and partial fulfillments of elements of 24:3-35. The interested reader may consult Orthodox commentaries. Then, in 24:36, Jesus starts to speak exclusively about the day that is, the last day. In 24:4-14, Jesus is preparing his disciples for events, most of them extremely difficult, that will take place in their lifetime. These troubles are not signs of the end. The disciples must be ready to stand firm through them. 24:4-8, 13. Then he says, "When you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains." This prophecy makes sense only with reference to the fall of Jerusalem. It cannot possibly apply to Jesus' return. When he comes, it will be pointless for an unbeliever to try to flee. And a believer will not want to flee. For the same reason, the following command not to go back to get a cloak and the woe for nursing mothers who must flee cannot refer to Jesus' return. But they make perfect sense if Jesus predicts that another abomination of desolation, like Antiochus Epiphanes of Daniel, is coming. Indeed, that abomination did come in Roman form in AD 70. The Roman armies were always an abomination, because they carried with them idolatrous images of the emperor, whom they worshipped. And those armies brought desolation, because their commander leveled the city and entered the Holy of Holies, defiling it. The line "let the reader understand 24:15 means that those who read Matthew, which would have been written before AD 70, must be ready to flee when they see Roman armies besieging Jerusalem. Indeed, the parallel account in Luke 21 makes this point explicit: when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, flee to the mountains. Luke 21:10-24. In fact, many Christians did flee, sparing their lives, when they saw Rome's armies coming. Eusebius, the first great historian of the church, says that when the Romans fell upon Jerusalem, the church at Jerusalem left the city and moved to a town called Pella. So Jesus, ever the good shepherd, told the first Christians how to survive those most harrowing years of the church's infancy. A wise preacher dealing with this passage may find particular value in focusing on this point. When Jesus gives instruction concerning future events, his purpose is not to satiate our curiosity or answer all or our speculative questions. Instead, his purpose is to protect and guide and instruct his people. Jesus gave relatively little attention to the question "when?" and much toward the question "how shall we live faithfully?" Preaching on such texts today should be shaped by Jesus' concern for the welfare and endurance of his church.